Right, hello. Good evening, everyone. From all over. Go around and say hi, starting with Erica. Dave. Tyler. Susan. Bob K. Jinryu. Mark. Marv, Shoketsu, Karen, Drew, Paula, John, Gaffel, Betty, Sabrina, Ruth Ann, and let's see. And now Chris can hear me. Hello, Chris. And yes, she's okay. Okay. Announcements? I don't have too much in the way of announcements. I don't know. Check the calendar. yeah, there'll be not. I will be giving the Dharma talk this Sunday. But then the Sunday after that, we'll have a guest teacher, Ryushin, who has given talks at Brightway before. And let's see. I'm cherishing the hope that we go back to meeting in our Zendo mid-October. If Delta follows the pattern it has elsewhere, numbers should be lower by then. And yeah, so we'll take lots of measures to be as safe as we can be, and we will just we'll stream from there. Okay. Any questions or other things that I should announce? Okay. So tonight we are on to the second, or no, the first of the nine fields, the second class, but the first of my nine fields of Zen practice, which, let's see, Tyler, you're Zoom host tonight, right? Can you look up the nine fields? Like the link to that nine fields page on my podcast website and share that with people. There's also a version of it that you can a PDF you can print out. And basically this, as I talked about last week, and the recording of last week's class is available as well on the Brightway Zen website. I did this in order, came up with this categorization of different fields of practice in part to expand our ideas of practice. And so it's kind of like a cookbook for practice, all the different ways that you might approach practice, not at all like a checklist that you need to check all of these boxes. And if you don't do them all, you're not a good Buddhist kind of thing. So the starting, of course, we have to start with Zazen. It also includes, if you are at all unfamiliar, Dharma study, which we'll talk about next week, cultivating insight, precept practice, opening the heart, connecting with the ineffable, Nyoho, or acting in accord with the Dharma in everyday activities, karma work, and bodhisattva activity. So as most of you know, Zazen is a central practice in Zen Buddhism. And Zen, that word comes from the Chinese word Chan, which means meditation, which means concentration. So what I plan to do for this class is give you instructions for brief instructions for Zazen. as if you've never heard zazen of, you know, how to do zazen before. You're completely unfamiliar with it. And in doing this, I think it, you know, it might be, you, who knows, you might find out something that you didn't know. But also, there's something kind of ritualistic about it. I mean, after all, as you probably noticed, if you were here for the reading at the beginning of the evening, it was kind of instructions for zazen. And we do recite Dogen's instructions for zazen. So at least once a week on Tuesday evenings, we recite instructions for zazen. And if you go to Japan and you go to a temple where they, you know, go to a Zen temple or monastery, they're likely to give you zazen instruction. And it doesn't matter, does it? They don't ask first. They're not like, well, how long have you studied Buddhism? Oh, well, you don't need the instructions. They just sit you down and they give you the instructions. And it's kind of a sweet little ritual. So I'm going to give you the basic instructions for zazen. And then this isn't really necessary, but I thought you might find it interesting, kind of a brief history of this form of meditation and where it fits in with the rest of Buddhism. And then talking more specifically about our form of meditation, Shikantaza, themeless meditation, and how frankly profound it is. And then I've got some kind of really practical take-home messages about zazen. But I hope that there will be plenty of questions. So if at any point you have a question, please feel free to, you know, raise your hand. I'm most likely to see it if you use the reactions button on Zoom, the bottom of your screen, or I don't really know what it's like on a tablet or whatever, but on a computer, it's at the bottom of your screen under reactions. And, you know, there's little reactions like a wait, you know, clapping and thumbs up and stuff. But there's another thing that says raise hand. So it's the raise hand thing. And then your hand will remain raised and I'll be able to call on you. But if you can't figure that out or you, whatever, you're welcome to just do it the normal way. So feel free to stop and ask questions. So instructions for zazen. There's so many different ways to give instructions for zazen. I haven't been giving them regularly. It used to be, and I guess we'll get back in the practice of this, at the Zendo, if you came for the first time, we would say, do you need instructions for, do you want instructions for zazen? And if you did, you would come back with me and I'd give you a, depending on when you got there, I had a 5-minute version and a 10-minute version and a 15-minute version and a 20-minute version. So I became adept at trying to just get across the core aspects of our meditation practice. And I did, it's available on the podcast website. I have lots of episodes about zazen, but I have one that I call the pamphlet, a pamphlet for zazen. So what in zazen instructions could I get into like a little trifold pamphlet? So that's kind of the core important stuff. But also very popular was a formulation that I put together called the 4 or 5 S's. So I'll use those tonight. So the idea is that you ideally find a spot, which is where I like to say where you won't be interrupted. It doesn't really matter that it's completely quiet, although whatever you can hear shouldn't be too engaging, like not generally like music or TV or conversations, but traffic or, you know, birds or whatever, that kind of noise isn't a problem. So you find a place where you won't be interrupted for as long as you want to sit. And for those of you in kind of busy situations and houses full of people, there's always the bathroom. Of course, you know, if you only have one bathroom, it might be in demand, but so you find that spot and you sit upright. So that's the first S, is sitting upright. So technically you could do this sitting in the airport, you could do this anywhere, but there is something very physical about this practice. There are mental aspects to it as well, but the physical is definitely the most important. And that is the one that if you do go to Japan and they teach you to meditate, most places they are not going to mention anything about what you should do with your mind. Nothing. They're just going to tell you how to physically sit. So sitting upright is like you want your spine to be like it's suspended from the ceiling. And that it's if you take a full breath of air and you feel that expansiveness, and then you let the breath out without shrinking down. That's so you don't want to be rigid, but you want to be expansive and full. And so that uprightness is important. And sometimes you need support for your back or something, but ideally you would be sitting, you know, we're not, it's not that's important that you sit cross-legged on the floor. You can also sit kneeling on the floor on a bench. You know, I like sitting on the floor, but there's plenty of people who sit in chairs, and our Zendo, we vote a third of the seats at least are chairs. And you know, ideally you wouldn't lean back in the chair. You would just use it for height. But a lot of times people need a little bit of support for the back. So I recommend sitting in a chair that is soft enough, but not like a big cushy chair. And putting something behind you, putting a pillow or a cushion or something behind you so you can sit as upright as you would if you were sitting on a meditation cushion and not kind of leaning back. It's not that that's like absolutely important, but there is a physical aspect to this, which is just it's not, we're sitting up on our under our own power. It helps us stay more alert. We're not leaning forward and tense. We're not backing away from or resisting anything. We're just right here upright. So we sit upright and then we sit still, and that's the second S. So we want to be as motionless as possible. This isn't at all like a, you know, we're going to be watching you on Zoom now. And, oh, I saw him move. That is, it's just the practice. So sometimes you can do it and sometimes you can't. Sorry, that'll turn off in a moment. So this is one of the instances where it's actually better to sit in a way that's comfortable, maybe in a chair, maybe with a little back support, so you can sit very, very still than to sit in some classical position. So you want to stay as still as possible. And this is like the body and the mind are trying to do the same thing, right? So we put the body in this position and it has an effect on the mind. So rather than us trying to make our mind like let be here right now and and let go of everything, the body is doing that. So we're sitting still. We've put aside all activities, right? Like even if our mind is busy, we have technically put aside all activities. We're minimizing the of fussing, right? There's always a little bit of discomfort. There's always a little bit, but we're trying to face that and just be with and tolerate hopeful what are hopefully a reasonable amount of discomfort during zazen. And this is part of the practice, is being with our experience instead of constantly trying to change it or get away from it or distract ourselves from it. So we sit upright, as still as possible, and silent. So we are quiet. We are not commenting on on our experience. That, and so I've heard several people say that that is one of the ways that they can get themselves to settle down just a little bit, is just to go, shh, you know, because basically our minds are like commenting and planning and evaluating and all this stuff. And so we're just inviting our minds to just be silent for a while, and not in a punitive way, but just that's where we're inviting ourselves to be silent. And we are, at least, again, physically, technically silent. And then the fourth one is simply be, or simply perceive is another way. Just like, so now you've physically sat still, and now what, right? And this is part of the koan of Zazen, is that our mind doesn't want to focus on what we're doing unless it's entertaining or, you know, interesting or, you know, engaging in an ordinary way. When we're just sitting there, our mind is like, let's see, what else can we do? We may just be just sitting here, but we've got to entertain ourselves somehow. So, you know, we're inviting the mind, we're inviting ourselves to simply be. For, I like to say, you know, if you've decided you're going to sit for 15 minutes, there is nothing that you actually need to think about in that for those 15 minutes. There's nothing you need to plan. I mean, if you really need to be dealing with something, then you should be dealing with it instead of sitting zazen. If it's that pressing, then you should be dealing with it. If it's not that pressing, then another 15 minutes is not going to matter. And that doesn't mean, of course, that our minds actually settle down and let go of these things, but at least that can be what we invite ourselves to do. It's like, for this 15 minutes, 20 minutes, however long, just don't worry about it. Just let go. Just, in some ways, this is the most relaxing and simple activity that we can possibly do. Even when we are sleeping, falling asleep, our minds start processing stuff, right? This is something where we are awake and we are trying to make things as simple as possible. And there are effects on our physical body, on our hormones. This is like the what it's called the opposite of the stress response. It's like the relaxation response. So even if it doesn't necessarily feel like you're good at meditating or deeply meditating or something, you are sending your body a message that things are, think we can chill out for a moment. We can relax for a moment. We wouldn't just be sitting there if actually we weren't safe. So we're going to simply be, and there's, you know, a huge dimension to that. You know, what does it mean to simply be? Who is simply being? Who is simply sitting here? What is extra? What can we let go of? What is pure experience? And then I kind of like this fifth one, in that, and I call it shine the light of awareness on whatever happens, because inevitably we sit upright and we remind ourselves to sit still, and we remind ourselves to be silent, and we invite ourselves to simply be, and then our mind wanders and we get caught up in things and whatever. So what do we do at that moment? And our tendency is to think we need to try some other method. We need to get better at this in order to, you know, control our mind or have it be more settled. But the key is that Zazen is a practice, not a result. So Zazen is what we do at those moments of choice, which may not happen as often as we would like them to, But as we're sitting there, is it once in a meditation period, twice? If we're lucky, depending on the person, depending on our circumstances, maybe multiple times. We just, you know, it's mindfulness, sati means like presence of mind. Somehow we end up with presence of mind again. And we, oh, right, you know, oh yeah, I'm sitting zazen. And what do we do at that moment? If at that moment we go, damn it, my mind is wandering again. That's not really the practice. That's probably just causing us ourselves more misery. But if at that moment we do, and there's different ways to phrase it. For me, you know, like simply shine the light of awareness on whatever is happening. Another phrase is open the hand of thought. So we've grasped thought, and now we don't have to get rid of it. We don't have to try to make thought not happen again. We don't have to judge. We don't have to react. We just let it pass. And I kind of like to shine the light of awareness because to some extent, you don't even, you know, even this can seem willful. Whereas shine the light of awareness can be, I invite you, shine the light of awareness on whatever has just come up and it is going to pass. invite it to stay. Joko Beck talks about identifying like what just very briefly in a very light way, what just came up, thinking about how so-and-so doesn't like me, planning what I'm going to get at the grocery store, and just kind of noticing that. And it's almost like a way of embracing it before we reject it. We just go, okay. And as soon as we shine the light of awareness on it, it changes. Our relationship to it changes. It's not controlling us anymore. And so we do that over and over and over again. And there we go. It can be a frustratingly goalless practice. Are you getting better at it? How do you get better at it? Should you get better at it? If you just sit there and sleep and feel dull, is that it? What should be happening here? And so one of the take-home messages for tonight is that those questions are part of the practice of zazen. That this whole approach is about the question. It's zazen is not, as Dogen says, it's not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease. It's just about being. Therefore, if our zazen practice isn't quite right, like that our sense of being is not quite right. So what do we do about that? It's not just a matter of applying some kind of technique. And with zazen, it's really more, it's very holistic. That's why, depending on what happens in our lives, our Dharma study, our insights, our precept practice can shift our zazen practice in surprising ways, just because it's about sitting down and being with your own body and mind. And also, like, you're always welcome to talk to me or talk to other folks who have been sitting for a while about your experience. It's not something the Japanese do, but it's something we Americans feel is quite necessary. So let me pause there and see if there are any questions bubbling up. or comments. Dave.
I think I'm unmuted. So I was doing sort of the preliminary reading. I went through the various podcasts, and it wasn't until I listened to the podcast 150 there with, you know, talking about, you know, the Dharma Gate, what was it? Something ease? I can't remember exactly.
Joyful.
Joyful ease, right. And I hadn't really considered how much I was beating myself up for not, for having thoughts interrupting, you know. I'd always heard, you know, when you have thoughts come in, you just kind of let them go. But I always had that feeling that I was doing Zazen wrong, and I never really kind of was conscious that I was beating myself up like that. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that when I first began practicing, I was instructed in the breath counting thing. You know, you count your breaths. You know, if you, your thought escapes you, return to your breath, count your breaths again, which never really was that comfortable for me. And then when you started in your podcast, you said, well, you know, you just go straight into chikantaza. You just go into just sitting, and you don't really necessarily have to go to the breath counting. And I've always sort of understood that counting the breath was sort of a necessary step in learning how to sit Zazen. So I just don't, why is that? Like, why do people teach that? I mean, I feel like the going straight to Zazen is kind of a minority view. And is there any pitfalls you think in kind of skipping the counting the breath part and just going straight into Shikantaza?
That is a great question. Yeah, I was taught, you know, sat down, here's the sitting, follow your breath. It's a standard Soto Zen way to approach it. And I think in one of the podcasts I mentioned this, where like, if you look on the Soto Shu, at least back, you know, a year or so ago, the Japanese Soto Shu website. So this is the Japanese Soto school on their official website. And there was something about the instructions for Zazen, and they had a quote from Dogen, I think. It was just like, this is not about following your breath. I was like, all right. So I think that it, you know, it's a little different in Japan. Well, for one thing, the majority probably of Soto Zen teachers would say it's good to do one of those mind calming practices first, to, you know, settle the mind, to learn to work with the mind. And I think that it depends on the person. And there are definitely people who even to sit is distressing and traumatic. And we actually talked about this the other week. Whereas for, you know, if you're depressed, if you're perseverating on things, if you are like, and your mind is just going over and over on something, then to just sit and not concentrate on anything can just drive you to complete distraction and be aversive, and you don't even want to do it, or it can make your trauma worse. So there's definitely a time and a place, depending on what's going on, for a calming kind of practice that kind of just gets the mind out of its ruts. However, if you're not one of those people, or if you're one of the people like you or me, Dave, who like that didn't really, wasn't that calming anyway. Like, I was like, that didn't help. It didn't tame my mind. It didn't help at all. So in that case, I feel like, you know, the pitfall can be, then we spend 10, 20 years trying to follow our breaths and, you know, control our minds, and that's not really our gateway. So and when you look at people and you look at what techniques or approaches they've chosen, going right to Shikantaza may seem sometimes like it's like, I don't know if I'm achieving anything. whereas these other ways you can kind of measure achievement more. But I don't know that people, I think there's people who have been trying to follow their breath for 20 years and it's not really amounted to anything either. So yeah, I think on another level, there are times and places and people for whom a little, you know, a practice like that can be beneficial. And I invite people to, you know, do that kind of thing. If you know, follow, listen to sounds or whatever, if that makes meditation more or pleasant, I guess is one word. But also, personally, I think it has to do a little bit with the Western culture's gaining idea. You want to be doing something. You want to be doing something that you can achieve at and you can measure progress with, and you can, you know, you're going to tame that mind. That's a very like Western culture kind of idea, as opposed to like, you know, sit and be at ease with your being. That doesn't give that same satisfaction. Karen.
My reaction only seems to have the thumbs up or clapping. So I'm curious what the instruction is with your eyes.
That is a good one. Yes. So the classic instruction is eyes open, but your eyelids kind of partly closed, so that, you know, you're not like, you're looking down at about a 45 degree angle or something at the floor or the wall. And therefore you just get your eyelids kind of naturally close a little bit, so your eyes aren't watering. And I like to think again that we're not staring at the wall or the floor, but we're keeping the eyes still, as still as we can. And one of the things that I've noticed, I have in here, if I'm present, my eyes are on the floor. And if I start wandering off and I'm thinking, especially about the future, the gaze rises and I'm looking at this cabinet that's opposite me. So it's a very interesting, like, I just am always kind of trying to bring the gaze down, because, and then oftentimes too, if you're thinking like it's kind of looking around. So that's another thing that we can just try to keep still. And then also in terms of the eyes, I got over it, but you know, for a while there was weird stuff where, like, you know, you're hyper focusing on things and like seeing shapes come out of the wall, and not like hardcore hallucinations, but just, you know, your eyes are trying to focus on something and you can't focus, and it made my eyes sore. But I think it's just the kind of thing that you can hopefully just get used to. And I know a lot of people close their eyes at least sometimes. And I do sometimes, particularly when I'm feeling a little sleepy and it's just kind of a struggle to kind of keep them open. And so I run the risk of falling asleep then, but sometimes then I turn my attention toward other physical aspects. Because with your eyes open, you're grounded in the here and now, instead of, you know, off in your head. If you close your eyes, it's interesting. If you watch what happens to your mind when you close your eyes, it's much easier to kind of go off into dreamland, as opposed to with your eyes open, you're always just right here. And that's what we're trying to do. It's just right here. And some people say, I close my eyes because having my eyes open is too distracting. But then that's like, you really can't be distracted from right here. We're just trying to be right here. We're not trying to go into some kind of transcendent state of, you know, concentration. So did that any answer your question, Karen? There's lots of different aspects to it, of course. So if you do like to close your eyes sometimes, I just encourage you to practice keeping them open like that at least sometimes. So you have that option and you can give it a try. Franklin.
Yeah. I'm curious about breathing in particular in Zen, and there's not a lot of emphasis on that. And I'm kind of curious as to why. I personally have been looking a lot into, breath techniques lately and how they're kind of connected to the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system and how they can be used for both relaxation and invigoration. And for me in particular, sitting Zazen often need invigoration. It's just, I tend to fall asleep. So one of the things I've been thinking about is how to use my breath work to kind of essentially re-energize myself while I'm sitting. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are around that and why there isn't more discussion around with that in Zen, especially given the history of the yogic tradition, which is very breath oriented.
That's another good question. So there are a couple lineages that get into breath work. There's a Rinzai lineage in Japan that's both Hogan and Chosen Bays have studied with Harada Roshi over there, and they have some kind of breathing that they do, and that's one of the core practices. And I think basically in the West, lay people in particular in the West, but Westerners are not really interested in being purists when it comes to traditions. So they just like to pull something from this tradition, pull something from that tradition. And heck, you know, it's oftentimes we learn something from another tradition that we really need. And it's hard to argue against it. I mean, I've always been just because I'm a teacher, but I felt like this before too, though it's part of me that's just really determined to find it all in Zen. Just, I don't know, for simplicity's sake or what, but in the West, people are going to be eclectic and find things, and I think that is fine. But I think it would be helpful to recognize, like, these are other practices. The breath practice is an other practice. Yoga is another practice. Art is another practice. Aikido would be another practice. So all of these things can be complementary, but they're not Zazen. And if I just had this vision when you were talking about the breath work, like if we were in a strict Soto Zen monastery and I was the abbot and I was walking up and down behind you with the encouragement stick, and I saw that you were doing some kind of breath work, you'd probably get a whack. I mean, like, stop that, you know, stop that. And just to make an argument for that, which I'm not really making the argument, but I want you to understand that that argument isn't just like dogmatism, pointless dogmatism, is we really don't want to have any idea about how our meditation should be. As soon as we're like, oh, I think I'm gonna do my follow the breath for a while first, because then I'll go calm my mind and then I'll do shikantaza, or, you know, I want to invigorate us, so I'll do the breath work. And so we always have an idea about how our meditation should be, as opposed to, this is not meditation practice. This is us. But to be fair, like, I have another take-home message is that this form of all forms of meditation, frankly, but this form of meditation in particular evolved in a tradition where regular long meditation retreats were part of the practice. And I can tell you from my own experience from the last year and a half now, going on 2 years of really not being able to go to a long meditation retreat and absorb myself, you know, one that I'm not leading, one that isn't online, one where I can really let go, I really feel it. It's like when we go into those long retreats, we let go without some kind of great effort to make our meditation any particular way. We're able to become very still just through the sheer hours and days that we put in. So I think it's tough to access the rewards of Zazen without doing some long retreats with some regularity. So it might be that actually in daily life, we find other ways to kind of, you know, pump up our practice a little bit, because it can get a little sluggish and dull and or unfocused or something. But I feel like those are ultimately, again, it's hard when life is so full and distracting, but like my Zazen has been just extremely busy, full of thinking and planning, and it just really doesn't stop except for just brief moments, those moments of choice, and I let go. And I look on that as a koan. I don't look on it as I need to do a different meditation technique. I look on it as a sign of the life I'm living right now, the sign of my spiritual state. And it's not something that I can quickly solve, but I keep my eye on it. Isn't that interesting? You know, and how might that change? How might I be able to be more present in the midst of all of this distress and climate anxiety and choices to be made and responsibilities and all that? How did, you know, is it really dependent on long retreats? What kind of state of mind could I really have that, you know, to embrace my life just as it is? So anyway, that was a long answer to a very simple question, but Erica.
Yeah, I was really intrigued by what you said, Domyo, about how in Japan the instruction you would get is really just around what you do physically. Mm-hmm. And I was curious, like, do they teach you anything about what to do with your thoughts, or is it more like what you were saying, that there's no goal and it's just you sit?
I'm not, you know, I haven't spent a long time in Japan. I'm sure there is variety in terms of how things are taught. But just in terms of kind of the pure, like if you go to Eheji or Sojiji, one of the head Soto Zen temples, you know, and you were being put through Zazen instruction, I think the instructions that we read by Dogen, about once a month, his instructions for the mind are what? Put aside measuring with thoughts and ideas. I wish I'm sure put I could aside, pull it up.
Put aside chasing words and phrases.
And there's a couple more things in there as well. And he says, think not thinking. What kind of thinking is that? Non-thinking. And basically what I'm saying is you get some instruction, but you go, what the hell? Like it's not very concrete instruction, right? It's okay, put aside. But so you put aside measuring and thinking and planning and all of that, but you also put that aside with respect to your meditation. So it's not that you put that aside with respect to everything else, and then you still have this evaluative mind about how your meditation practice is. you're trying to like really surrender control and yet be present. So I kind of like the phrase, see what happens. So the idea is that you are very attentive. And I feel like that is the core difference. It's not just, you know, sitting there bored, letting your mind wander like a sack of potatoes, like, although sometimes that's happening, frankly, but that you are trying to pay as much of attention as possible. And that think, not thinking, thinking phrase, I never really liked very much, but I read a great, what I thought was a great essay by a Japanese monk, Soto, official Soto Shu essay. And he's, because obviously this is all in translation too, so sometimes that's it. But essentially what I realized was, from his point of view anyway, it wasn't, so think, if you think about being free of thoughts, that is just another thought. And not thinking, or non, I like to phrase it in terms of, rather than that, it's not a matter of thinking. It's not a matter of thinking or not thinking. What else is going on? What is deeper than thinking or not thinking? I mean, I always think it's funny that we might sit there and we might be sitting upright and still and silent. And then if our mind wanders, we say, I wasn't even present. Who is that? Who's not present? What we're saying is our consciousness changed for a while. But the teachings say we are not our consciousness, which is kind of a trip. Who was not there? Your body was there. You were still enacting your intention to sit zazen. Like, that's what raises a koan as well, is what is the nature of our consciousness and our experience? Why do we prefer some kind of experiences and not others? We know there is a way to show up and a way to be lazy and not practice. We know that, but it's not as, so another thing that we read is by Kazon, and actually, I think we read it tonight, and he said, measuring realization is based upon some notion of enlightenment. This is not the essence of Zazen. Practice is based upon strenuous application. This is not the essence of Zazen. Teaching is based upon freeing from evil and cultivating good. This is not the essence of Zazen. Teaching is found in Zen, but is not the usual teaching. Rather, it is a direct pointing, just expressing the way, speaking with the whole body. So it's like teaching and practice, but it's not the usual. There's effort required, but it is not the usual kind of effort. Well, we only have 10 minutes. I can ditch the the rest of my plan and just answer questions. That's the most important thing after all. Well, I'll give you my take home messages then. You'd say, so let's see, I already said practice is not a result. It's something you do, it's not a result. So I would say, after a meditation period, if you want to think, well, was that a good Zazen period or not? It's not about how still or transcendent or whatever you were. For me, the question is, what did you do in those moments of choice? In those moments of choice, did you get irritated or self-critical, or did you just kind of blow them off, or did you, you know, or did you meet them with gratitude? Ah, here's a moment that I woke up. In a way, I had nothing to do with that. My willful self had nothing to do with that. Ah, and then we just, for as long as we can, we just let go. Let's see. I would say another take-home message is that Zazen will vary by session, by week, month, or year, or over the course of your lifetime. It still keeps changing for me, and anyone who has studied with me for a while knows that every few years I come out with a new, like, now I know what Zazen is really about. Of course, I don't really claim that, because then I know that's not a permanent state, right? But I'm like, oh, that's what Zazen is. And I think that's really cool. Let's see. Talked about those other things already. Just in a really practical sense, in terms of making it into a part of your life, regularity is more important than session length. So if you have some kind of idea that you need to sit for half an hour, and you need to sit for half an hour every day or 5 days a week or something, and that's like, it's just like kind of any positive habit, right? If you've bitten off more than you can chew, that is, and that if that's not happening, then I would recommend you scale it back and you try to make it a regular part of your life, no matter how short the period has to be. So I used to say, what was it? I think I used to tell people, still do, you know, sit 5 minutes. Better to sit Zazen for 5 minutes several times a week and actually just keep that thread of Zazen than to think you should sit 20 minutes several times a week and not do it. So you just start where you are. But I think my Dharma brother actually said, now you can do it for 30 seconds. So there you go. I mean, to even just for a moment, just to take that, you know, to sit still, put everything down, take a few breaths in this manner can be very, very important. But I don't know, ballpark, it's different for different people, but I would say a good, if you will, maintenance regimen, you know, like they recommend, you know, how often a week, what's kind of the minimum amount a week you should exercise to just basically maintain your health. I would say for Zazen, 30 minutes to an hour, maybe most days, 5 days a week is fine. Because oftentimes there's some day of the week that just doesn't really fit in there. That's pretty good. But again, don't exclude yourself from the practice by any means if you can't do that. And okay, I've talked about all my other take-home messages already, just over the course of the Q&A. So, Jinryu,
I have a take-home message.
Yeah,
don't give up.
Erica?
Yeah, I know like some schools of meditation suggest splitting that time up, you know, like 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening. What is the thought with Zazen? Is it better to do it in one sitting or?
I think that is totally dependent on the person, like what your experience ends up being like or the convenience in your life. I tend to only sit once. I'd sit, you know, I have like these morning meditations where I sit a little longer in the morning and then I don't sit again all day. But I think if you just had to just choose, that it can be really nice to bookend your day that way, to start it off that way, but then to, there tends to be a different quality to both meditations. It's nice to like start the day that way, but then at the end of the day, there's a kind of recollective quality to it as well. So, other reflections? Anyone want to share anything that they've learned with their Zazen practice over the years? Ways that it has changed? John?
Could I say something about just breath awareness? It's not so much about counting the breath, but I find, you know, usually the instruction with Zazen is to focus on your breath, you know, not at the tips of your nostrils or your chest, but like below your belly button, you know, a big juicy. So for me, so that's how I started out with, you know, with paying attention to the breath. But for me, the fact that it was down there, I don't know why neurologically this happens, but for me, that leads to a full body shikantaza, just a sense of your whole body sitting there more than, say, that refined tips of your nostrils kind of awareness. So maybe that's a link between.
Yes.
It has been for me.
So. Yes. The Zen folk talk about the Tonden. It was mentioned in the Kazon reading this evening. So, but he was just saying like there was different places you could focus to kind of wake yourself up. But there is that, like that practice that I mentioned they do in the Rinzai Monastery definitely has to do with, like, it's called Sasokan breathing, and it has to do with the hara, which is, you know, located down there. It's your energy center or something. So there's definitely, it is valuable to think of lowering your energy in your body, especially if you end up having any kind of physical things go on, energetic things. Sometimes people have like little involuntary movements or like movements of energy or something like that. And it's very good to get the energy from however you think of doing this, right? The emphasis from kind of up in the head down into the belly. Betty.
Thanks. How does walking meditation fit into this schedule and into the nine fields? And is that something we should work in?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess it kind of is another version of Zazen. I mean, you don't want to do entirely without Zazen, because it is that stillness and simplicity is, there's no replacing that. But like today we read for about Kazon, and he talks about getting up and walking, and he talks about walking without walking. So our walking meditation is so slow that it's like you're not cruising and, you know, wandering around. It's just this very slow walking, half step with each breath. So when we're in the Zendo or on Sundays, for instance, we do have a break, not a break, but we have Zazen, and then we have 10 minutes of the walking meditation and 20 minutes of Zazen. So yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, and included in the Zazen field. And depending on, that's another practice that can be really good if you are dealing with trauma or really freaked out or just, you know, the sitting still is very difficult. The walking meditation can be very, very helpful. And even if it's what we do when we do it in the Zendo, and we do it together, and we regularly, you know, we have regularly intersperse our seated meditation with the walking meditation, we look at it as like, now we're taking that same practice and we're moving it into just a little bit of movement. So it's a very, very, very simple movement, but it helps. It's almost like a little bit of an interface between, you know, silent seated meditation and the rest of our lives. Somebody else had a hand raised, but then they put it down. Was it Tyler?
I just didn't want to keep us too late. But it was just that we mentioned the term Dharma Gate of joyful ease.
Yeah.
And that one got stuck in my head as something that I say to myself. And what it did was, I don't remember if this is something someone mentioned or something I just came up with my own, but it makes me smile a little bit. And when I'm doing Zazen, if I smile, it just I don't know what it is. I'm like, right, this is enjoyable. This is something that we're doing. And the joyfulness, the word joyful makes me smile. And that just like recenters me really nicely for some reason when I feel like I'm getting out. So smiling a little bit really helps me.
I love that. And I actually spent in the middle of my practice, you know, some of the stuff I've talked about in my spiritual story on the podcast, you know, some of the really grim times, I actually did a practice. I was assigned a practice and I did it all retreat for a whole like 6-day retreat. I smiled. And it was like, it's just physical, you know, at first it's just a physical practice. Cause it's not like, oh, and then I suddenly felt happy, but it changed things. It really changed things. It shifted the whole dynamic. So thank you for that. All right. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Good night.
Thank you, Damiao.
Thank you for being here.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.